This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Giovanni Battesita Tornelli. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, excellent, Giovanni. We've just done two really interesting interviews looking at Amarone and ripening processes. But one of the things when we talked about Amarone was that you were talking about some of the ways you're looking inside the vine. And I want to talk a wee bit about genetics and some of the new tools that are available to people like yourself to explore what's going on. So you mentioned these new tools. What are the new tools?
These new tools...
It's not CRISPR-Cas9, is it? No, it's too late.
I know, yeah.
It's a bit late for CRISPR-Cas9.
No, it's okay, but I will not talk about that. That's also one very interesting tool.
But
we need time to talk about it. But another thing is we had the genome, the grapevine genome sequencing is 2007, so 12 years ago.
That's full sequencing as opposed to what most people do. For DNA testing and working out grape varieties, it's very
Yeah, but that is a milestone because starting from that, we developed a lot of new tools because we need the genome. We need the list of the genes. That was the starting point of everything. Having the list of the genes, so 30,000 genes of the grapevine, we could develop tools to analyze their expression. And now these tools are really, really much more easier to use, also less expensive. So of course they are expensive, but not so much like in the past. So we can use it for research, but also for some commercial situation. And the thing is, we can test which genes are expressed in the berry at a given time. So, for example, during ripening, we learn that now what is the ripening program of the berry by analyzing the gene expression. So we know if the berry is ripening in the right direction or in the wrong direction because we know exactly which genes are expressed in a particular area or...
Okay, before we get into that, let's just step a little bit further back. Just to put it into context, you've got a cell.
Yeah.
Inside the cell, you've got DNA. And somewhere between the DNA and the cell is the genes.
Yes.
All right. And it's not blue genes or...
No, the genes are part of the DNA. So the genes are the short sequence of DNA. So not all the DNA are genes.
Mm-hmm.
The genes are here and there in the DNA.
Okay, so it's part of the DNA chain.
Yes.
And it's sections of the chain.
Yes. So 30,000 section of the DNA are genes. All the other part are intergene region that we don't know what they do, but they are there.
Some people call them junk DNA.
Yeah, junk DNA.
Yeah. Although you were saying last week in Amarone that you found a new genetic mechanism.
Yes.
Was that genes or was
that
just...
No, genes. Always genes.
Always genes. Okay. So we've got this... genes,
yes,
and they turn on or off depending on what?
Depending on their let's say constitutive program in the berry. So the some genes are switched on and off independently from everything. It's like a program that is going on. A developing program of the berry is in part defined, and you cannot change it. So the berry is doing that because time is passing, the clock is going on, is like a child that is growing and will grow in every condition, will not remain a child. And the berry for the berry is the same. So there is a developing and ripening program that is set by the plant, by the variety, and you cannot change it. But there is also another part of this program that can be influenced by the environment, by the let's say the viticultural condition or application or what you do.
Are they different genes or are they the genes taking information from the environment and using that information like a program?
It can be both. So some of the genes can be a little bit enhanced or reduced by the environment.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are new genes that are not... normally expressed by the
because
in the normal condition. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That, for example, if you expose the cluster to the sun because you remove leaves, then you have a lot of genes that are induced in those berry because of the sunlight, and those genes normally are not expressed in those berry. So it's a new expression.
Okay, so that's what genes are doing. Yeah. They're sort of like the program.
Yes,
and they take inputs and they have outputs. And I presume the way they do that is through the creation of proteins.
Yes, of course, protein or the regulation of other genes. Some of these genes are very important because they are master regulators of other genes.
Okay, so that's cool. And you're saying about the tools that you've got now. So yeah. What are you using?
The thing is like you are spying into the berry on what the berry is thinking to do. Maybe not doing, but thinking to do. So when you have this kind of, we call it a transcriptomic analysis, that because the transcription of the information that is on the DNA, on the messenger RNA, is called transcription. And so when you analyze all those transcripts, you call it transcriptomic. So this kind of large-scale gene expression analysis tells us which genes are expressed in that particular moment. And so you understand what the berry is thinking to do, I say, not is really doing, because you are not.
You're
never sure that what you learn from this information is really done in the end by the berry. But of course, the berry is thinking, for example, to accumulate anthocyanin. Yes, and of course that is true because you see anthocyanin appearing in the berry. But sometimes
it's the color of
bees. Yes. But it is very powerful because you have all the information, all the program. Nothing is skipped.
It's a bit like in the old days, it was a black box.
Yeah.
You knew the inputs, light, yeah, water, CO2, all that stuff. Yeah. You knew the outputs, sugar, yeah, flavors, yeah, whatever. But you couldn't see the mechanical, yeah, yeah, wheels turning.
Yeah. Yes.
And now you can't quite see the wheels turning, but you can see what the program,
yes,
wants to do.
Yes,
to
in, do in a particular moment.
Yeah. Okay.
And for example, it is now clear that Verizon is a very sharp point in which the program is start to be completely different.
Switched.
It's a switch. And also this is a very interesting because we are now trying to understand who is the master regulator of this switch. So maybe not one, maybe two, maybe three, but we think not many. Mm. So there must be few genes that at a certain point tells the berry, please start ripening now, immediately.
Mm.
And if we are able to understand which these genes are, then maybe we can control the beginning of the ripening, which would be very important,
yeah,
also in relation to the climate change. If we could postpone the ripening of 1 week, maybe it could be enough in this for 100 years.
Yeah.
Not meet much more.
Yeah, yeah, because you're saying last week, the week before last, that the problem with global warming is that the verizon is, the flowering is occurring earlier. Verizon occurs at almost a set time after flowering.
So earlier.
And then you're getting your ripening period in a warmer period, so your ripening is,
yeah,
progressing a lot faster,
yeah,
even if it's,
yes, yes,
even if you pick early, it's doing things differently.
Yes.
Whereas if you could delay Verizon,
yeah, a little bit, maybe just 1 week, in, yeah, in many conditions would be enough.
Yeah, yeah.
But you need to know exactly how the mechanism works.
Yeah.
And that's what the most advanced research is doing in these days.
The problem with a lot of research on vines is, if it was, say, a computer program or something like that, you could just repeat it loads and loads of time. You don't need to know what's going on the inside. You just change the inputs every time,
yeah,
and then see the outputs, and, yeah, then you can sort of say, okay, this is what,
yeah,
I need to do.
Yeah.
But with the trouble with the vines is you only get one crack every year.
Yes.
So by you need to look at the mechanism because you can't just,
yeah,
do everything in,
yeah,
in a
in
week.
In every part. Of course, we can now grow grapes also in controlled condition and have some this kind of new system that allows you to see the Verizon many times of the year. Also, there is another new resource that is the Microvine. Maybe you heard about it.
No.
It's a very little vine. It was a mutation that was found in Australia, which have a cluster in every node. And so you have cluster at very different level of development. So you will have on the same cane, on the same shoot, you will have cluster that are green, cluster that are at Verizon, cluster that are ripening.
Oh, so it's like a tomato plant.
Yes, and it was a natural mutation. It was found in Australia, as mutation in some hormones.
Yeah.
And that is a very good system because you can have the Verizon in every time of the year because it's always there. The Verizon is always in your plants.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only going a little bit up in your shoot.
Yeah, yeah. But that doesn't make sense to me because I don't want to get dragged into this too much. It's quite interesting. But I always thought that the grapes formed in buds.
Yeah.
So the bud bursts, it unfurls. Yeah. First thing that comes out is the flowers or inflorescences or whatever you want to call them. And then the rest of the vine just keeps growing.
Yeah.
But if you're getting flowers or grapes at different nodes, then they wouldn't, you won't have an infinite number of flowers being formed the year before.
Yes.
The flowers formed the year before, so...
No, this what you are saying is happening in normal condition, in normal vines, because the year before you have the induction of the formation of the inflorescence into the buds.
The inflorescence being the flowers, yeah.
Yes. In this kind of mutant, you have flowers that are produced every time at every node at the place of the tendrils. So instead of tendrils, you will always have a little cluster.
Okay.
And it's forming along the formation of the shoot. So in the same season.
If the grapes could eat?
Yeah, it's not a commercial vine. It's just an experimental system now that is very much studied because you can learn a lot of things because you don't have to wait every year the ripening. So many, many research group now use this system. Of course, then you have to move to the traditional varieties, but you can learn a lot of things in this simplified,
pretty cool. Okay. That's pretty cool.
It's called microvine.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of that. That's interesting. Okay, so you got your microvines. Do you use microvines?
No, not yet. No. Now, we have a lot to do to study the function of the genes. So when you see, before I said that the Verizon is very sharp change of program.
Mm-hmm.
So we see that there are some early, we call them molecular signal, that are really bursting. So they are genes that they are expressed before other genes. So maybe few, 10, 20. So the thing is to know exactly the function of those genes. And this is not very easy to know. So the genome sequence does not every time tells you what the genes are, what's the function of those genes. The genome sequence, the sequencing of the genome tells you there are 30,000 genes. Maybe I can tell you the function of the genes, maybe not. Sometimes the function is good, sometimes it's completely different. And every time you have to test, so if you are studying few genes, you have to test exactly what these genes are doing. So you have to take out the gene from the grape DNA and study it in some, let's say, artificial condition to understand really what they are doing. And there's no time now to tell you how to do that. But in the end, you have to end up with a precise function of each of the candidate that you are studying. And maybe among those few candidates, there are the genes that are the master regulators of the ripening program.
But isn't it, I always thought the problem with DNA was that there isn't normally a gene that does something. Mm-hmm. It's usually a group of genes and maybe even a wider circle of genes that set the environment that gene is then responding to.
Yeah.
So taking it out of context, won't that mean that you can't quite get the full understanding of it?
No, the thing is that there are hierarchies of genes. So there are some genes, of course, and in the end you end up with thousands of genes that are expressed exactly at the same time. But these thousands of genes are somehow downstream of some master regulator. So in the end you have to understand that not all the genes are the same. There are a sort of hierarchy, and only few of them are controlling the other. And so you should, at the end, isolate those master regulators.
Yeah, and what you're looking for is a master regulator to control Verizon.
Yes.
This is probably something as a scientist you'll hate, but how guesstimating, which is what scientists hate, guesstimating, what do you think could be the tools once you work out what the master regulators are to control them? Because I can imagine you could spray something on your vine to do that, maybe, but spraying may or may not be appropriate.
Yes, you are right. We know that spraying with some hormones is very successful to delay ripening. So that's also...
Oh, really? So you know that now?
Yes, yes. There are many studies from the Australian Chris Davis group that had demonstrated that And the hormones are not so, impacting the environment, because you need very, very low amounts of principle, of compound to have the effect. It's not like for the defense that you need a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, yes, this is a question that we always receive. Okay, when you have the information, what to do? And... of course, there are some possibilities that now are offered by the technology, which is the possibility to modify the DNA very precisely, so it's not with the old transgenic fashion of transferring genes from one species to another, but just modifying at the precise point the DNA of the plant, so without modifying anything, so creating mutation,
knocking out a set of genes,
knocking out, and now the technique has done a lot of improvements, and I think the technology is now available, and so the producers and all the should really think about that a little bit more.
Okay, so the issue that most people get upset with is in the UK, the press went Frankenstein. I know. I'm with you on that. Don't worry. Let's not worry about that. But that, as you say, is transgenetic, where you're swapping genes from one species to another. And irrespective of whether you think it's a good thing or a bad thing, it's probably unlikely that that's going to be popular in the wine trade. But a Cabernet Sauvignon, where you've taken out a gene... so it's not working, it's still effectively a Cabernet Sauvignon. Yeah. It's just that it's had something removed. And it seems that I think removing might be more palatable to people than adding in a zebra fish making the green.
No, yes, sure. as I was saying, these new techniques are now so precise that you can do very, very, very little changes in the DNA, which are very similar to natural changes that always happen. In natural condition, you have mutation. We know that the white grape is a mutation from the red grape, and we are eating it. It's a natural mutation.
Is that microvine, was that a natural mutation, or was that a man-made mutation?
It was a natural mutation that was hidden in a grape. So this is also different. In the grape, normally, that is vegetative propagated, there are two layers of cells. One is the one of the epidermis that is propagated also only as epidermis, and the other one is everything what is below it. So when you propagate grapes for several times, you accumulate a lot of mutation in those two layers that never mix. So if the mutation is in one inner layer, you will not see it. And the thing is, the researcher at a certain point started to propagate the grapes taking the cell from the layer that was inside, so not the epidermis, the other one. And by propagating it, it was, I think, Pinot Meunier, that the mutation could show up.
Yeah.
So it was there, but could not show up because in a layer of cell that was not important for this trait. So it's a natural mutation that was discovered by, let's say, artificial, of course, propagation. But, okay, if you don't want to modify the DNA, then there is the old-fashioned, let's say, crossing, which now is a little bit helped by these new tools because we...
Oh, you know which ones to cross?
Yes. You know the genes that you would like to have. So maybe your genes are in another variety and you would like to keep to take these genes in maybe into Corvina or Cabernet Sauvignon or whatever. So what to do? Cross your variety with another one and then to grow up the progeny with an assisted selection, which sounds old-fashioned, but I can say that is now with this new molecular tool can be very fast.
Yeah, no, because you can identify exactly what genes you want there, exactly what your genes there, cross them, you've got your seed, and as soon as the plant's growing, you can...
Very little plants, you can starting selecting, so you don't have to grow up 20,000 plants until they make fruit.
Yeah.
You can grow up 20,000 plants at the beginning, but then with your selection, you remove the most majority. So
So the ability to develop new clones,
new varieties, can let's say put together the traits that you would like
very quickly
to be there.
Okay.
So of course this. It's not the very, very, very new modern technologies like DNA editing, but still it's something that is...
You got to be careful because wine people, especially vineyard, with this move to natural wines and organic wines, the idea of using genetics might be a little bit dodgy, but using genetics to speed up selection is probably completely acceptable.
Yeah, and also I would ask the consumer if I produce an Amarone with Corvina, if instead of Corvina I would use the daughter of Corvina.
Yeah, no, no mind.
What's the problem?
No,
it's a daughter that's completely similar to the mother. Why not?
I agree with you. I think that's a good idea. I've got a question for you. This is about clones a little bit. It's a little bit of a tricky question. If you have a Chardonnay vine, you get mutations in the Chardonnay, so you get these different Chardonnay. They're Chardonnay still, but they might have bigger berries or smaller berries or big leaves. Who knows? You get different variations, and they're called clones. Now, if I take a clone, but there's also, and that can occur from mutations, so UV light, or if we smoke too much, you'd get mutations and, all that sort of stuff. But there's also a set of genetics which is called epigenetics, and that is where they switch on and off based on their environment. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's why I said. And are clones because of mutations, or are some of those clones perhaps epigenetic and therefore based on the region, on the environment? Because you hear people talk about vines adapting to the environment.
Yeah.
Now, if they're adapting to the environment, it's not a mutation. It's probably an epigenetic.
Yeah.
So my question is this. If I get a clone and I plant it in one climate, and I take the same clone and I plant it in a different climate, I could have epigenetic switches turning on so that even though it's genetically the same, I've actually got a different expression of the same clone.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or
you are right, but I have to say the research is still have to do a lot about that. There are only very few studies in which it was demonstrated that with, for example, DNA sequencing, you can distinguish clones, because very often the number of mutation that one clone accumulate is really low.
Yes.
So, and you wonder, is it possible that what I see, the difference that I see in this clone from the other comes only from those few little substitution of bases in the DNA. How is it possible? And many times the substitution are not in genic regions, are in intergenic regions. So,
not in the genes themselves.
So not the genes. So the protein maybe is not even affected by that mutation. So the question is what you say. Maybe that there is something else. Maybe epigenetics have a role in the distinction of clones. But also, epigenetic is even more difficult to study because it's a...
There's no difference.
No, because it's very complicated. You have to study methylation of DNA. So sometimes DNA become methylated, so obliged to be silent. You have some chemical modification of the DNA that may make it to be silent, so it cannot express the itself.
Okay.
And it is really possible that when you grow one clone or one variety in another place, it accumulates also epigenetic stuff, epigenetic modification. And the thing is, those epigenetic modification, if I take back the variety, put it in the original environment, should go back, maybe.
Would it?
But it needs a lot of time. Who in the past has moved one variety in another place, then take the same variety, put in the original place? Nobody. So the thing is, you need a lot of years to study these kind of things.
And
epigenetic is something that really came to fashion in the last 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Not enough time to have something really, really sure about this.
The reason I've been thinking about it is because people get very excited about clonal selection. Mm-hmm. You know, I want this clone because I want it to express this, and I've gone for this particular clone of Chardonnay or this particular clone of thing. And then they'll plant it in a different environment to what the original came from. And my thinking is that you may not land up with the same grades, because the epigenetics switch on and off. So you're not getting the clone that you think you're getting.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And also, my personal opinion is that with this clone selection, you would not, it's not enough to face the new challenges of horticulture. So, yes, you can look for the most, let's say...
Drought tolerant.
Whatever you want, or for the quality of your particular place. But, I mean, those are clones, and the variety is the variety. So how far is moving the clone from the original traits of the variety? Not much. We'll have a little bit more more big berry, or a little bit more acidity, a little bit less sugar, but a very little. So, and is it enough for the new viticulture now? So I think, yes, it's always an option to look for new clones, but we should move, let's say, mentally or towards another frontier. In which we have to think really on what is the future in front of us for viticulture. It looks like you are playing with very little,
too small
for what is happening around you.
Yeah, the changes are too big for the ability. Okay, brilliant. Okay, then, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for the time. That was brilliant.
Thank you very much also to you and also audience.